Hey guys, welcome to episode 5 of The Delta on Amplified, brought to you by Hermes Investment Management. It's the 3rd of September, and today's podcast will be slightly different from what you've heard from us previously, in that we'll split it into two sections. The first part will be a review of 2018 credit markets, and the second half will be 2019 and review and some forward-looking projections. I was told by my 13-year-old son that I sound very downbeat on these podcasts, so I'm going to try and be a bit more upbeat. And I'm helped today by one of the financial news rising stars, Andrei Kuznetsov, a member of our portfolio management team here in London. Andrei, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me today.
My pleasure. And we're going to take things on a slightly different path to what we've done previously, in that we're not going to be thematic. We're more going to run through 2018, 2019, and then to make some sort of forward-looking projections about how we're setting up our portfolios. So it's a real stream of facts and a stream of interesting anecdotes about 2018 and 2019, hopefully. But we always try to start with some context, and the context is that it's the 3rd of September 2019 today. iTraxx crossover is at 259 basis points. I closed the last podcast, episode 4, by saying that I expected crossover to be wider by now, that I thought credit spreads were incredibly tight. There are about 220 basis points. We are a little wider than that. But between the last episode and now, we've had a little bout of volatility, and we're back at relatively tight levels. Thank you, Andrei, for joining us. Well, let's start with 2018. What are the big themes of 2018? I know you want to chunk it down into sort of time periods, so I'll leave it to you. Why don't you start off with how 2018 started?
Thank you, Jaco. A very interesting year indeed, 2018. One of the most interesting things in the first half of 2018 is the significant outperformance of triple C part of the market versus, say, double Bs. The pickup in triple Cs has reached a 5-year low of 470 at some point in May and was driven by several factors. First of all, the trade war uncertainty led to investors considering domestically focused companies, which are usually smaller and lower rated companies, as more attractive, thinking that they will be less affected by the global macroeconomic environment. And on the other side, double Bs in a rising rate environment, with most of investors not being able to actually hedge that interest rate component of the bond, there was less demand for double Bs, which in the end led to this dislocation in the market. And at that point, the market was really not paying attention to the potential risk of end of cycle.
So in that hunt for yield, people were preferring to go down in terms of credit quality in that first half of the year than they were to think about going more international in terms of their portfolio composition.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it didn't work out that well, actually, at the turn of the year, once the market realized that the domestically focused companies are not really isolated from a slowdown in global economy. Also because the whole uncertainty situation is impacting the confidence of CEOs across the board, not only the big companies, but also the small companies. And you have to remember that a lot of those bigger companies are still customers or suppliers to those smaller companies. So it's all part of the same game.
So first off of 2018 was tough for us, right? Because we're up in terms of quality generally. We prefer to be more conservative in our credit selection. And those triple C names were racing along quite nicely for that first half of 2018.
Absolutely. I think looking over the last 18 months, it was the most challenging thing in terms of managing the portfolios is the strong performance of the triple C part of the segment at the start of 18. But that has changed at probably around the middle of the year, once the PMI started turning and people started paying more attention to fundamentals and the fact that the earnings are slowing down, that the macro, the confidence is already going feeding through the hard data. And market at that point also started focusing on the triple B segment, which has grown in size from 1 to 5 trillion since the crisis. And it is true that a lot of those capital structures were levered more than what you would expect for a triple B issuer. And there was a lot written about it, how it's overlevered and it's where the next crisis is going to come from. But in reality, what we've seen over the past 18 months is that a lot of those companies were able to act in a creditor-friendly way and cut dividends, sell assets. And I think there's more to be done there, especially on the asset sales with the record high dry powder in private equity space at $2.5 trillion. And we've seen more recently that BBBs have performed very well. And the equity markets have rewarded those companies that pay attention to deleveraging. And in that regard, the views of equity holders and bond holders are aligned to the benefit of credit holders. And it remains important in this type of environment. And in some cases in telecoms, actually, the board reviewed the compensation structure for CEOs or the C-suite level executives to put leverage targets into their compensation, which is not something we have seen in a while.
Super interesting. So from our perspective, one of the things we're always worried about on those lower investment grade names is the shareholder activism. You know, trying to drive shareholder value means more leverage, almost by default, is the sort of mantra that we hear externally. But that's not necessarily the case. And when we see that going through into compensation, people keeping leverage relatively low, that's a really, really good sign for us about the state and quality of that market.
I think the media focus on this fact really helped to drive the change in the attitude of boards and management teams towards leverage. It was very beneficial in the end. The 2018 was an interesting market in terms of technicals as well. We've seen quite a bit of outflows from high yield universe, but at the same time, it was more than offset by a decrease in supply. U.S. high yield, for example, supply was down around $170 billion, which is 40% down, largely because there was a lot of demand and a lot of inflows going to leverage loan space. Because in a rising rate environment, people prefer duration-light products such as short duration and leverage loans. And again, there was a lot of demand for loans and there was not enough loans. So a lot of issuers, particularly aggressive issuers like LBOs and M&A, went to the loan market for financing. That's why we've seen different picture in terms of credit metric trends in loans and bond market. In loan market, we've seen significant deterioration with record number of single B issuers in the universe, particularly in the US, as well as large number of loan-only structures, which means you have less sub-debt behind you. Also, quite a few cov-lite deals. I think at some point, 70-80% of the deals coming to markets were cov-lite, which is not setting up the universe for good recoveries in the next recession time.
And against that, we've got the technical of a joining CLO market, burgeoning CLO market, both in Europe and the US. We're seeing, you know, growth in that market and demand for loans. As you rightly pointed out, people were very focused on the fact that one of the big risks that they foresaw in the first half of 2018 was increasing inflation, increasing interest rates. The Fed's going to raise rates. Surely there isn't much further for it to go down. And therefore, short duration and lev loans and FRNs, I guess, within bond space were the themes that everyone was focused on in 2018.
Yeah, the one big difference in 2018 versus 2019 is because of the flows. The flows in US were still better, particularly in IG market versus Europe, because in Europe we had the supposed end of CSPP, which is going to impact the investment grade market, and there was not much demand for the asset class. So a lot of European issuers went to the dollar market, to the Yankee market, and often priced at attractive levels. This is the opposite of what we are seeing this year, actually. This year, a lot of US issuers decided to go to European market, not least because in CFO's mind, negative yield psychologically sounds like a good level to hedge your revenue exposure in euros if you have some.
Great. Okay, so one of the reasons we focus so heavily on that is that, you know, we're very concentrated on security selection. Last podcast, we had Fraser and Johnny in here talking about how important execution is to us, doing those little bits of hard work all of the time. that Yankee, reverse Yankee technical means that there's lots to do in that regard in terms of security selection. That was important for us in 2018 and trying to sort of keep pace with what we needed to deliver, despite the fact that Triple C's were doing really well. Now, as we move forward from that first half of 2018, third quarter of 2018 was a little different. And if I remember rightly, it was really sort of emerging market volatility that started those kind of ripples in the water. Am I correct?
Yes, Jack. As you know, emerging market credit was one of the fastest growing asset classes within global fixed income over the past 10 years. And last year was quite exceptional in terms of the number of idiosyncratic things we had going on in the emerging market space, whether it's Brazilian or Mexican elections or Turkish or Russian sanctions or the still going on the trade war between US and China. All of that has impacted the space. And we've seen significant drawdowns in Q2, Q3 last year, but which have corrected later. And one of the bigger reasons there is, again, the technicals. The supply, really, the primary market issuance has really adjusted to the environment with supply down around 60-70% at some point during the summer last year. And it presented an opportunity to get exposure to the stronger issuers within the emerging market space, particularly those issuers that get sold together with domestically focused issuers. So exporters, there are a lot of companies in the emerging markets these days that are really global in the nature of their business.
It's also fair to say that there was a bit of baby with bathwater occurring between emerging market equity and emerging market credit markets, that we were seeing, you know, such large outflows in emerging market equities for perfectly rational reasons that people were thinking that must have an impact on emerging market debt as well, right? That was one of the themes that we were seeing in the third quarter. Maybe moving forward to what was relatively volatile, even over the sort of last 5-10 years, one of the most volatile quarters that we've seen, that fourth quarter of 2018, which almost felt like the inverse of what had occurred in the first half of 2018. Why don't you talk us through some of your observations looking back at that period and what you saw occurring?
One point on the emerging markets. The interesting point on flows in emerging markets is actually relative to emerging market equities, emerging market hard currency debt has done very well throughout the period. Emerging market local currency debt was much weaker, and is actually year to date one of the big differences, the big inflows into emerging market hard currency versus emerging market local currency, and it all has to do with the dollar. Market expected dollar to weaken for a couple of years now. First, we were talking about dual deficit as the reason, then because U.S. is going to slow down versus the rest of the world, or the rest of the world is going to catch up with U.S. growth, something so recoupling in terms of growth prospects. But dollar remains strong, and one of the big reasons behind it is U.S. economy continues to outperform the rest of the world, and it's very hard to make a case for emerging market local debt unless we see a weaker dollar. So on Q4, indeed, a very interesting quarter. And it feels like going forward with the amount of non-traditional monetary policy around the world, we are more likely to see mini cycles than the big cycles or the big crisis like we saw in 2008. So we will see more of those mini episodes of volatility, and they were likely going to be around periods of lower liquidity like Q4 or August times, for example. So we had a change in perception around the fundamentals in Q4 as people started to realize that a lot of LBO deals again went to the loan market, leverage is high, and all those reasons we've already discussed. So people started taking money out of the loan funds because of fundamentals, and that as a result of that, we saw quite significant drawdown in the loan space. Also, Europe significantly outperformed the rest of the world, and US in particular. So at some point, Europe traded 2 standard deviations cheap to US on historical basis in Q4. And a good example of that is reverse Yankees. So reverse Yankees have grown really fast, both in high yield and investment grade market. And at times, there's dislocation in that part of the market because a lot of those US issuers are not covered by majority of asset managers in Europe, and a lot of US guys don't really have mandates flexible enough to invest in euro-denominated debt. So, for example, one medical data or and testing company from US, they have euro and dollar bonds outstanding, same credit risk, they were trading at double the spread in Q4. So for the same credit risk, again, you get double the spread, which is an amazing opportunity and obviously corrected later. But being able to do switches like that and monitoring those type of relationship is key in times like Q4.
So that's coming back to the real mantra that Fraser left us with on the last episode, which is that we want to maintain flexibility. We don't want to be siloed. So we don't just want to do US high yield or European high yield. We want to do European high yield with dollar bonds included. We want to do US high yield with euro-denominated bonds within them, but also a significant focus on that security selection. So doing the relatively boring grind work of finding the right security for that extra little basis point. So it almost sounds like you're a sort of clone of Fraser's sort of tightness.
Yeah, as he had a big influence on the way I form my views.
Okay.
It is true, security selection remains key. So if we talk about 2018, as we have discussed, there was significant amount of compression in the start of the year with CCCs outperforming. While this has changed later in the year, in Q4 in particular, and we have seen significant degree of decompression in many cases between the senior and sub parts of the capital structure, whether we're talking about senior versus hybrid bonds, or whether we're talking about in financials between lower tier 2 and A tier 1. And that presented an opportunity actually to switch from higher parts of the capital structure into lower part of the capital structure in Q4. Another thing that was interesting in second half of 2018 is you had to be a little bit of contrarian on your sector selection. Home builders in the US was one of the biggest underweights for the majority of the market because they saw the rising rate environment and worsening macro environment having a big impact on those issuers, and with memories of 2007, 2008 still fresh in the minds of some people, there was a lot of worry about the space. The market underestimated the debt reduction that the sector undergone since the crisis. Also, the change in the structure of the market with much less subprime, and the fact that a lot of it was already priced in, with again in H2. 2018, home builders trading around two standard deviations, or even more than two standard deviations, cheap. And this presented an opportunity. Obviously, it worked pretty well as the interest rate environment has changed at the turn of the year.
But much easier for you as a portfolio manager to have been able to increase the amount of risk you were taking in that fourth quarter of 2018 from a relatively lighter, more conservative footing that had been tough to manage in the first half of 2018. But other things to chuck into the mix there, I guess, you know, longer maturities was a theme that we'd been talking about for a while, and you know, Fraser alluded to in the last podcast. And then the first podcast we ever had, we had Vincent Benguigui on here talking to us about options. So having the capability to be stronger, be able to go onto the attack a little bit more in the fourth quarter of 2018 was you know, almost set up by being more conservative going into that fourth quarter. What was your experience like in the last couple of weeks of 2018? How much did you enjoy that volatility, having been conservative going into it?
I have to be honest with you, Jacko. There was panic in the market in Q4 2018. It felt for some people maybe like the end of the world, the end of the cycle, and big outflows and significant pickup in defaults seemed likely in 2019. But I think what really helped is having options in a portfolio at that point, out of the money option that obviously with the gamma and delta helping you along the way as the market sold off, that gave you an opportunity to buy risk. And there you had to look for survivors. Obviously, it's very hard in that type of market to buy triple C's, companies that possibly, very possibly, can go bankrupt if the macro environment doesn't improve. So what we look for in that environment is the subordinated instruments of strong investment grade issuers, for example, corporate hybrids or MLP hybrids in the US. Also, in financials, the banks that have built good capital buffers, so subordinated instruments in that part of the market, as we think that banks are well positioned for the upcoming volatility in terms of what they have done since 2008. So that's the way we played the Q4 2018.
Okay, and you know, for the record, panic was not what you portrayed through those couple of weeks. It looked very calm, like you were just going about your business, enjoying yourself, and getting stuck in. So that it was fun watching you work at those times. Okay, listeners, that pretty much wraps up 2018. We'll be joining you again for the second part of episode 5 to discuss 2019 shortly.
Thank you for listening to the Hermes podcast. If you found it interesting and would like to listen to more podcasts by Hermes, please visit our website, Hermes-investment.com, and search for podcasts. These podcasts are for information purposes only, and the views, information, or opinions expressed therein are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Hermes Investment Management and its employees. Performance should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. All the performance represented is historical. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future results, and investors may not recover the full amount invested.